The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. Welcome to the 50th Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, happy 50th show to you, partner.
Hey, thank you, Bill, my friend. They say the first 50 are the toughest ones, so it's going to be smooth sailing from here on out, I'm sure. Although, you're tempting fate with that in terms of how we're doing this show. Explain.
Well, yeah, Chet, what we're doing with this 50th anniversary show, we're going to do it the hard way tonight. You'll be at the controls tonight instead of me from your studio home in South Jersey. Well, I'll be doing my best from a hallway on Concourse C in Charlotte Douglas Airport, catching an 802 flight. Well, our very special guest, the original Philly fanatic Dave Raymond, will be joining us from his location in Wichita, Kansas. Steve Swickowitz will be joining the fun for the second half of the show. With all that said, we're going to get it done. And what a great way to do it with the greatest mascot of them all, the Philly fanatic, his longtime friend, you could say, joining us. We'll also talk about the red-hot Phillies, the looming trade deadline as Jonathan Papelbon is already gone, and, of course, Eagles training camp opens this weekend.
Yes, indeed. An exciting time of year, Bill, with the Phils making deals and the Eagles getting set for what I think is going to be a very, very interesting, very intriguing 2015 training camp.
Well, as we mentioned tonight, we have Dave Raymond making his first ever Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable visit. Chet, I'm excited to hear the story of how the greatest mascot of all came to be and became legendary here almost 40 years later. We also have our trivia question tonight, with the question being announced around 7:30. The prize for tonight's trivia question will again be the 8x10 color photo signed by the LCB line, Reggie Leach, Bobby Clark, and Bill Barber, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first caller that can call in and correctly answer the trivia question. We'll get to that one later on, though.
Yeah, and by the way, we want to give this away tonight, so we're going to make the question so easy that, you know, you just got to have it. In fact, we are going to give you the answer at some point during the first half hour as we talk with Dave. So,
that's
with that
what I was
said,
going to say. Just pay attention. Pay attention to the show, and you'll have the answer to the question. Let's welcome Dave Raymond to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
Just let me make a quick correction. I'm in Topeka, Kansas, and I'm in the bathroom of my hotel room because it's the best sound that there is in this room. So while you're hanging out in the terminal, I'm actually sitting on the toilet, but using it as a seat. So I just want to make sure everybody's clear that we're all in our favorite places.
Hey, we're going to do it the hard way, but we're going to get it done.
All right, let's get to it. Thanks for joining us, Dave. We really do appreciate it. All right, let's talk about the origin of the Philly fanatic. Phillies were becoming a pretty good team back in the mid-70s, making some annual playoff runs postseason. They had Philadelphia Phil and Phyllis, I know, I guess, in 76, 77 as kind of unofficial mascots. But then what happened? How did that all change, and how did you get involved?
Like everything else that you would think when you look back, that it wasn't something I certainly planned to do. I was going to the University of Delaware. I was playing football for my father. The Carpenter family, the owners, were big supporters of Delaware football, and frankly, the reason why my dad came to Delaware was in part because of Bob Carpenter Sr. wanting him to be here. And I was telling my dad I wanted to coach football. My father was trying to discourage me from it, and he said, look, quit your summer job as a lifeguard, and I think I can help you get an internship at the Phillies in the 1976, which was the summer that we were celebrating the bicentennial, and the Major League All-Star game was going to be housed in Philadelphia. So as an intern, I had many things to do in 1976 to keep me busy. In 1977, I also was an intern, but I realized that when the All-Star game was not there, it didn't look like I had a lot to do on a daily basis. So in 1978, when it rolled around and the Phillies were trying to contact me at my fraternity house on the campus of Delaware, I thought they were actually calling me to let me down easy because I was Tubby's son and friend of the owners. But what they were doing was they were calling me to say, look, can you stay for all the games because we need somebody to say yes to this very stupid idea we have, which is to create a green furry Muppet and make him the mascot for the Phillies. And we'll pay you $25 a game. And so that was Frank Sullivan at the time that was telling me this. And I said yes because, I wanted a job, and I realized that my father was probably right, that maybe I wasn't suited to be a football coach. And if I could work for my favorite team and actually get to know the players of the late 70s of the Phillies, I was, and get paid for it at the same time, I said yes, and I didn't care what it was they were asking me to do. And that was really the start of it. I just went up to New York. I got fitted for the costume. It was made by a company that was in part owned by a woman who was one of Jim Henson's original designers. And Bill Giles actually got Jim Henson on the phone, who directed him to Bonnie Erickson, as the person that would be perfect to create this character costume. And it was delivered just on the very same day that I was supposed to appear in front of the Philadelphia fans. And the advice I got from Mr. Giles was to make sure that I had fun. And when I went running out of his office realizing I'm a college student, I've been asked to have fun, and I'm getting paid for it, he yelled at me, G-rated fun, David, G-rated fun, which was my first editing. And that's how it got. It's still an amazing thing to think that it actually worked and that everything kind of fell together and somewhat in the perfect storm. And here we are 38 years later where the Fanatic is still doing wonderful things for Philadelphia fans and the city of Philadelphia.
Well, Dave, that leads me right into my question. I actually don't know the answer to how many guys have actually taken that role beside you, but I guess my question is, what keeps you going? Why does the Fanatic continue to be the best mascot in the game, even with different guys in it besides you?
Yeah, I think the first reason why it was success is because of Bill Giles and his vision, and then the Phillies as an organization supporting the idea that you really need to make sure that there is something other than baseball that's going on to develop fans. It was their belief in that, their support in that, and their vision that would be great. And then it was me being a Phillies fan. I'm as much of a Phillies fan as anybody. I knew who to hate. I knew when to hate them. I knew when to attack them in a friendly way. And I continue today to be a dyed-in-the-wool Philadelphia sports fan, but maybe more important, a Phillies fan. And then the other best friend of the Fanatic, Tom Burgoyne, came on about 5 years before I retired. I hired him as my backup, and we've been best friends ever since. And so we completely understood who the Fanatic was. Tom Burgoyne is the same type of Phillies fan that I am. And when that was handed off to him to be the Fanatic's next best friend, he got it. He understood it, and he continues to this day. And I think in part it's because of the two main performers have always really understood what Philadelphia Phillies fans were and what made them tick. And it will continue to do that because the Phillies have created this, this character that will go on long past me and Tom, because it's just cemented in that belief that you got to have some fun at these baseball games and you've got to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, Dave, I read an interview recently with Tom, and he said one of the best compliments that he ever got after succeeding you was that, yeah, there had been a change, but really nothing changed. So it's all about consistency, I guess, with the Fanatic.
Yeah, and he brought, he's brought a whole new element to a marketing and branding with writing the children's books, and things that probably I was not geared intellectually to do. He's a talented kid, and I only say kid, you know, he's now at the age when I stopped actually getting in costume, because after I left the Phillies, I continued for another 12, 13 years of performance after that. So Tom physically has gone on longer, and he's just such a good friend. And we both look at the Fanatic as not something that is ours. We look at the Fanatic as a separate entity of that we are really in awe of and want to protect. And so I think that's part of it too.
The key is, I guess, to draw families to the games. That's what it was all about when Bill Giles and you talked about it back in 77, 78. Is that what it is, just the whole family atmosphere?
It is, but I took it on as a challenge because I wanted to make sure I entertained the adults, and I looked at like that was a challenge, and then I wanted to do it in a politically correct PC G-rated entertainment because that was my directive. So I wanted to get close to the players. I mean, that my motivation was, you know, I knew physically I would never be a major league player, but I played sports. I played college football. I was just good enough athlete to dig and scratch my way to be able to play at that level, but could never be a professional. But that's what, like every kid, I wanted to dream that. So my deal was I wanted to go impress the professional athletes that I was a pretty good athlete in that costume. And that drove me to get close to them, which in turn had them fool around with me. And then the fans got a real kick out of seeing the Fanatic engage a professional baseball player and to see the human side of them. And I really think that's where it really clicked was, yeah, it was easy to entertain the kids because all you had to do was show up in a costume, and then it was more difficult to entertain the tough, grizzled Philadelphia fan. And the way I did that was, hey, they all would like to meet the players. They'd like to fool around and become friends with the players. So the Fanatic did that for them. So I really think that was the real secret.
Well, Dave, you mentioned earlier about knowing who to hate. So, of course, we have to ask you about Tommy Lasorda.
We have a little clip, as a matter of fact, from a nationally televised game in 1988. A little 30-second clip for you of what happened during that game.
Tommy is out there as the Philly Fanatic has a stuffed mannequin of a Dodger, and Tommy trying to get that Fanatic close. You see the physique of the of the mannequin. Tommy's a little bit hot, I think, as he's going to move that over now. Look at him go. He says, you don't make fun of me or my ball club. That's the quickest Tommy's moved all year.
Let's talk from the frame that I mentioned about knowing who to hate. So the backdrop for Tommy Lasorda is he's a guy who grew up in Norristown with his brothers. Took everything that you could take from Philadelphia to be part of Philadelphia. Then he moved to L.A. and started to make friends with Frank Sinatra and all the stars, everything that we would detest as a Philadelphia fan, he turned into. So he was a favorite son that left and then went to the dark side. So, you know, and the Chavez Ravine and the hallowed grounds of Dodger Blue, you know, we just can't stand that. So it was an immediate oil and water thing. And I got to know Tommy mostly on a friendly basis first, where when we were in Japan in 1980 for the National League American League All-Star Tour over there, the Japanese fans loved it when I made fun of Tommy Lasorda, who was like a god over in Japan, because he is the true ambassador of baseball. He's done great things for baseball, and he truly is a guy that's responsible for promoting the game well. So when I made fun of him, the Japanese fans went crazy. He enjoyed playing along with that. So when we came back home that following baseball season, I continued to do it. But on that night, he was frustrated and upset because he had entered into a deal with Oral Hershiser to lose weight with SlimFast, and the guy hadn't had pasta for 2 weeks, so it was a recipe for a disaster. So when he saw me come out there with the dummy again, he just snapped and went out and beat me up violently with the dummy, which was interesting because he said that he thought the Fanatic was violent, and that's what he was trying to you know, stop me from being violent, yet he came out and physically accosted me. But the beauty of that story, guys, was Stan Hochman wrote an article the next day after that, telling the world and telling Philadelphia that Tommy Lasorda and Dave Raymond were acting like immature babies. And I knew Stan Hochman, so I called him up on the phone, and I said to him, I said, what are you talking about? I go, I'm the Fanatic. I'm doing my job. Tommy Lasorda is the Dodger of the manager of the Dodgers, and he's coming out. He's the one that you should be arguing. And so, in the minutes of us arguing for just a few seconds on the phone, all of a sudden Stan Hochman started to laugh because he suddenly realized that he had reached the depths of a sports writer having a mascot call him and argue with him about an article that he wrote. So it's something that Stan always laughs about when we talk about the fond memories of Tommy and the Fanatic.
I'm sure you've got plenty of memories, but anything else stand out, or any other incidents with players or managers?
Well, the Hubie Brooks, the Mets were my favorite team to interact with because they were full of a bunch of cut-ups and Jay Johnstone-type players. They were just coming into their own as they moved into the middle 80s, so they were having some success, and Hubie Brooks loved to fool around with the Fanatic. And my fond memory of him was performing at a spring training game down in Clearwater, and he had set up for the whole Mets to come running out of the dugout in mass and tackle me and jump on me, which they did. And Hubie had always been playing around with the Fanatic prior to that during the season. So they all came to me, but I fell on my back and they were stacked on top of me, and I started to get claustrophobic and nervous that I was going to get hurt. So Hubie was the first one that had jumped on me. So he was laying on top of me, and I started screaming at him, Hubie, get off. You guys are hurting me. And then at the same time, I reached down to the inside of his thigh, and I started pinching the inside of his thigh as hard as I could and he started screaming, get off. He's serious. Get off. And they all jumped off, and he came in to see me because he heard that the Fanatic had broken his nose. He thought that I had broken my nose, but when they jumped on me, it had actually snapped the costume's nose. And so I said, no, you dummy, you didn't break my nose, you broke the Fanatic's nose. And then he pulls up his shorts and shows me the giant hickey that I had made on the inside of his eye by squeezing his skin. He goes, yeah, but you injured me. So it was those types of relationships that I just really treasured, because it meant that whenever those guys came into town, they knew me as a person, and they really loved the Fanatic, so they would get together and play all kinds of practical jokes that ended up being wonderful entertainment, you know, that I didn't even, you know, create. It was just the players' love of the Fanatic and having fun. So it was those types of memories, and there's dozens and dozens and dozens of them with people like Willie Stargell and Dave Parker. These are, you know, the greats and Hall of Famers that I got to know and got to meet and interact with. That really is the real joy of being the Fanatic. And the thing that I miss today is the Philadelphia fans and the players and getting to know, you know, the personal side of some of these players.
We're going to have you on again to get some more stories about the Fanatic era. But I want to ask you what you're doing now. I know you've had some other recent ventures, the Fun Department, Raymond Entertainment Group. I love your title, by the way, the Emperor of Fun and Games. Tell me what you're doing now.
Well, first of all, that's a self-appointed title, so it's nice to be able
of course
to do that. I left the Phillies, and I got into the business of designing and creating mascots and mascot programs, and that's what Raymond Entertainment does. But I continue to do that, love doing that. I was just in England recently working for Manchester City Football Club. We're going to do some mascot development for them and a number of teams that the City Football Group out of Abu Dhabi owns now. So it's truly become an international business for me. I love performers. I'm training performers. But I think the thing that I really enjoy doing the most is I've been doing a lot of public speaking around the theory of the power of fun, which is really what the Fanatic has taught me about how important it is to have fun at every moment that you can, and that fun works everywhere. So I've been doing a lot of motivational speaking, and I've been speaking a lot with companies in and around Philadelphia, like Leadership Philadelphia, which is a great organization that trains executives from companies. And while I'm running my business and an entrepreneur, I'm also learning about interjecting fun into the workplace. places like Vynamic in Philadelphia, which is a wonderful healthcare consulting company that has a great culture. So this idea of the Fanatic and providing fun for sports fans has really bled into the development of the fun department, which is about helping employees have fun at work and speaking to groups both in and outside of the corporate world about how to engage with the power of fun. And I'm almost finished with my book. You know, everybody's writing a book, and I'm writing a book called The Power of Fun. It should be done at the end of the year, and it weaves in all the stories that we're talking about and how they relate to how you can use fun to make yourself happier and healthier, even at the most difficult times of life. So it's kind of been a fun journey, but I still enjoy developing and building mascot programs, and that's really, truly what I love to do.
Bill?
Hey, Dave, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned earlier about your dad, and, you know, for those of the listeners that don't know, your father's Tubby Raymond, a legendary Delaware football coach. I guess he's approaching 89 years old, and I was reading up on him a little bit. It sounds like he's still very active, and he's also an artist. I found very interesting, and you played for him down there for a couple of years. I'm the crazy college football guy in this group, so I just wanted to talk a little bit about all that time, and I'm sure you grew up as, you know, from the water boy all the way on through and ended up being a player.
That's true. It was the one thing that I really wanted to do was play football for my father. I wasn't really interested in my education. I hate saying that because I wish that I had focused more on education when I was at Delaware. All I wanted to do was go play football for my dad, and I felt like I had lived all of my dreams when I did that. It was one of the most amazing things that I did in my life. We got to beat Temple at Franklin Field. I mean, they're just great memories. But, you know, my father is going to be 90 this November. He's sharp. He's alive. He's so into his artwork. Through his artwork, he actually raises money for the Tubby Raymond Foundation that supports at-risk kids in Delaware. If you wanted to learn more about it, you could just go to tubbyraymond.org. There's a painting right now that we have duplicated in our are giving away for donations to the Tubby Raymond Foundation. It's the three quarterbacks that played and did well at Delaware and played in the NFL, Gannon, Flacco, and Scott Brunner. And each of those prints are signed by my dad and by the three quarterbacks. And that really has helped raise almost $100,000 for his charity. So he's active. He's really talented. I mean, he's painted many political figures, and he's just finishing up Jack Barcelona, who was the president of Wilmington University in Delaware, and he's done a fabulous one of Ruley Carpenter, and so he's very, very talented, and I think that's really replaced his, you know, his coaching now is his painting, and you know we're proud of him, and it's fun to be involved in helping him with that charity.
That's really cool. Great stuff. Well, hey, Dave, we do a segment on our show each week where Chet does this with each of our guests. It's called 10 at 5. Basically, he has 10 somewhat easy questions, some easy for you, and you get 5 minutes total to answer them. You up for this?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Do I get a prize?
Well, I think had a picture of the Philly Fanatic he was wanting to give away or something.
Nice. That would be great. I'd love that.
And, Dave, you've got to keep your answers brief, otherwise we're going to zap you through the phone and you get a little stinging in your ears, so remember that.
Uh-oh. Okay.
All right. Dave Raymond, known for many years as the Fanatic's best friend, what is the one best piece of advice for a mascot to be a success, someone the fans will take to?
You have to make sure you enjoy the experience, and you have to know your audience. You got to know where you're from and work with it in terms of, what would they love? What do I love? But have fun.
Which pro sports mascot is the second best one out there?
I got to go with Clutch the Bear in Houston because he's a Delaware graduate and a good friend of mine. But he is an awesome performer.
Now, number three, is it true that you helped give birth to the Orlando Magic's Stuff the Magic Dragon?
Yes, I actually did. Pat Williams asked me to come and be the first performer inside of Stuff. And the funny part about that was we were very successful at Church Street Station. I took the costume back to my hotel, and I hung it up on one of the fire extinguishers that went off in the middle of the night. It ruined the costume and flooded an entire floor of the hotel. And if you don't believe it, it's in his book called Making Magic.
Wow. Now, there's one human mascot in pro sports that I know of, Ragnar the Viking. What's your review?
I don't know. I have a lot of this is going to sound funny coming from me, but the first thing I want to say to Ragnar is get a life. You know, it's one thing to hide behind a mask, you know, and they don't know who you are. But if you're out there truly becoming a Viking, I think you need other things in your life. But I'll applaud his effort.
Are there any pro team mascots that just don't do it for you?
It's a political thing for me not to say that, but you know, I think I got to say the Texas Rangers, making a costume into a horse just never works. You know, it looks freaky, it looks scary, and I know the kids work hard there, but it you know, it's a horse with legs. You know, with human legs, I just can't help but think of the Godfather every time I see the Rangers mascot.
Gotcha. Dave, who was your favorite Philly in the 16 years when you were around the team?
Oh, my God, Tug McGraw. And I had a lot of good friends, but Tug McGraw he's a left-hander. And before I became the Fanatic, I was an intern, and I was shagging fly balls out there with Eddie. Oh, my gosh, I'm having Alzheimer's. With our famous general manager, I got Eddie. Help me, please.
Ed Wade?
Ed Wade and I interned together, and we shagged fly balls, and Tug McGraw came over and looked at me and said, "Hey, you're a left-hander. Throw me a curveball." Well, I was a pitcher in high school, and I threw him a curveball, and he said, "Hey, that's a major league curveball." Now, I know he was lying to me, but I fell in love with Tug, and we became good friends. And unfortunately, he passed away with the same cancer that my mother died of, and I miss him every day.
While you were particularly close to the Fanatic from 1978 to 93, did any of the Fanatic's stunts go horribly wrong? Any, like, real big screw-ups?
Fortunately for me, it was just a few bumps and bruises. But, you know, I made some mistakes where I made fun of some of the players that, like Wes Chamberlain, about being late for a game. And I made it look like when they introduced him, like I overslept. And Wes Chamberlain came up to me and said, "If you ever do that again, I'm going to break you." And the Lonnie Smith, making fun of Lonnie Smith, I got in trouble doing that. So, you know, my zest to try to imitate the players sometimes went wrong.
All right. Speaking of 1993, your final season, how much fun was that pennant-winning season with Lenny, Dutch, Crocker, Inky, and those guys?
There's never been, look, as far as I'm concerned, and there's never been a greater collection of underappreciated athletes and then also great people and a team. That team won solely because it was the perfect combination of attitudes and perfect combination of leaders with Dalton, Dalton came to my wedding or my bachelor party, so you can imagine how good that bachelor party was. They knew how to have fun. They understood one another, and they were really, really great teammates. And it is such a shame that it ended the way it did, because they should have been. They deserved to be a world championship team. It would have been one of the greatest world champions in the history of baseball just because of the personalities and who they were.
All right, a couple more, Dave. In 2004, the Chicago Bulls convinced Benny the Bull to slim down, part of our nation's focus on good health or something maybe. Has there ever been talk of putting the Fanatic on a weight loss program?
No. And this is the political correctness that drives me crazy. It's not what you look like. It's what you do, and it's what you eat. And, you know, this body image issue is just something that we got to get over. And plus, the Fanatic, for God's sakes, is a fantasy character that was created by a Darwin experiment that went wrong. He's healthy. That's what his clan looks like. All they do is eat grass. He's a healthy guy. Let's leave him alone, okay? Fat is funny, and I don't care what anybody says about it. Fat's funny, and that's what we do. We're having some fun here.
Now, the Fanatic is a big guy, Dave. It gets hot in the summer, so we got to ask, just how much of an odor problem did the Fanatic have on those hot summer nights?
Well, I'll just give you an idea that the first year, the advice that we got from the people in New York City that built the costume was, you can't wash this costume. It will ruin it. Well, so for an entire year, that costume was never washed. So you can just imagine, if you think that hockey pads smell bad after a while, the Fanatic, it got to be smelling so bad that I just threw it into my bathtub with some Woolite because I said, I don't care if I ruin it. It can't smell like this anymore. And we actually discovered that we could wash it. So for an entire year, that thing did not get washed.
Oh, my. And one bonus question, Dave. Now, during the show, we discussed Tommy Lasorda's 1988 attack on the Fanatic during a nationally televised game. Did Tommy ever get over that?
Well, he's just written this book. He was on baseball on Broad on Comcast Network, and he was interviewed, and he went right back into telling how rotten of a character the Fanatic was, and that I'm lucky I was alive. You know, if he really got a hold of me, he would have killed me. So no, he hasn't gotten over it. Apparently, eating some more pasta and getting off that diet just didn't, you know, clear up his mind at all. He's still hot about it. I've talked to him personally about it a number of times, and when he's around his entourage, he loves to joke about it, but any chance he gets to shoot the Fanatic down, he does.
Dave Raymond, great stories and a great job playing 10-5.
Well, Dave, we want to thank you for joining us, and we would certainly like to try to get you back. I think there's we're just scratching the surface. There's a ton of more stories and a ton of more great things to talk about with you, but we certainly appreciate you coming on with us.
Well, I appreciate you asking me, and I hope you catch your flight. And now I can get out of the bathroom and go to dinner.
All right. Well, thanks again, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great evening. Bye now.
Yep, you
All
too.
Right. All right, Jeff, let's get our trivia question out there. As we said, our prize for tonight's question is an 8x10 color photo signed by the LCB line. Reggie Leach, Bobby Clark, and Bill Barber, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, the first caller that can call in and correctly answer the question. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. So, here's the question. If you were listening, paying any attention, the answer was said at least twice, if not three times already during the show. What year was the Philly Fanatic born and made his first appearance at a Phillies game? Easy enough, Chet?
Too easy, but I like it.
Too easy. Okay, well, let's take a break and thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And, Chet, with that, I am going to sign off, and I'm going to turn it over to you and Swift to finish this up. I'm actually going to try to keep on listening, but I'm going to have to get in line to board the plane. So I'm going to leave it with you, my friend. Happy 50th show, and Dave Raymond, fantastic guest.
Awesome job. Have a safe flight, Bill. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
See ya. Swit, are you joining us?
I'm here, Chet. Thanks for inviting me. It's a great honor to be on such a milestone show this evening.
Thank you again, Swit. And I think we do have a caller right away for this potential prize-winning guest. Who's with us on the Philly Press Box Radio?
Hey, Chet, this is Danny Bevins. How you doing?
Danny Bevins looking for another autographed picture, I think.
Hey, I sure am.
All right, we asked the question just a couple of minutes ago. What year did the Philly Fanatic make his debut at the Vet?
That would be 1978.
You are correct, sir. And you have another picture for your wall, a nice 8x10 of the LCB line. and we will certainly get that to you, Danny. Did you like hearing those great memories from Dave Raymond?
That was awesome. I absolutely loved the Fanatic all these years, and always had a good time when we went to see games and just watching him. I mean, he was a show unto himself. Absolutely.
Yeah, 37 or 38 years old, and he still looks exactly the same, the Fanatic. I don't know how he does it.
I don't know either. That's amazing. We need some of that elixir he's drinking.
Exactly. Hey, thank you, Danny. We'll get that picture to you, and you have a good night, okay?
Thank you very much, sir. Enjoy the show.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, we have us a winner, and Swit, we're going to talk some football before we get to baseball and hockey. So are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go for it.
You are always ready. Swit, back on Philly Press Box Radio. Eagles training camp is upon us. Players report to the NovaCare complex this weekend. Multitude of questions this time around for Chip Kelly's crew. The health of the new quarterback, Sam Bradford. How will new running backs DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews fit in? How will the offensive line do with Harrimans and Mathis gone? How the revamped defense do with so many new parts? Swit, what do you think is the big story to follow in August?
I think there's really only one story, and I think everybody knows what it is, and that's the health of Sam Bradford. How is he going to – how much is he going to be able to participate in training camp? Is he going to play any preseason games? As someone who's had two ACL surgeries myself, and granted I'm not a professional athlete, but that is not something that it's easy to come back from. I'm really curious to see how his mobility is going to be in training camp, but that's the number one thing. I think the offensive line, that'll take care of itself in due time, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But without a doubt, Sam Bradford's health, number one, and I think the only issue that I'd be looking at in the training camp period.
So, you know, I was a Foles guy. I was kind of disappointed when they made that deal. I'm hoping it works out as an Eagles fan, but I'm still not convinced that Sam Bradford, even if healthy, is a huge upgrade over Foles. I'm hoping he is healthy and that we find out, but I'm not so sure. What's your take on what you've seen from Sam Bradford during his injury-riddled career so far?
Well, you know me. I hate to agree with you, but in this case, I think I'll have to. I mean, that's a big question. If healthy, is Bradford an upgrade? I think it's a wash. I think Bradford has a better skill set in as far as having a little bit more mobility. However, Foles, when asked to run and pick up a first down in years past, he's been able to do it. I looked up some numbers from 2 years ago, and he, much to my surprise, he ran for over 220-some-odd yards. So, when they're not going to certainly design any rollout plays or call any rollout plays for him unless it's something broken down. But, you know, he can get it done. Foles can get it done when he has to. But Bradford, I don't think we'll see any kind of plays called for him like that, any kind of design runs. But I really think it's split down the middle of 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned the offensive line already. Todd Harrimans and Evan Mathis, both experts, although I guess Mathis is still looking for work. Jason Peters is a year older now. Should we have faith that this line will get it done, protecting Bradford and blocking for Murray and Matthews? What do you think?
No, I really don't see a problem with the offensive line. I mean, if you look at Harrimans last year, he missed half the season. Mathis missed 7 games last year. So with the exception of Kelsey, Lane Johnson, and Jason Peters, I mean, you had kind of like a rotation going. I guess Alan Barbary was in there, and they moved a couple of guys around to in the mix there. But I don't see a major problem. And one thing is with Chip Kelly, and I ripped him on social media a couple times, and I've heard from it from your loyal listeners. But I think Chip Kelly is a guy that if he sees a problem, especially on the offensive end, he will take care of it. So I don't see a major problem with the offensive line. And if something doesn't go right, I think Chip will find a way to correct it, whether it's putting an extra tight end in or putting in a running back to block. He will make corrections and adjustments where there is a weak link.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is the three most important guys on that offensive line are Kelsey, Peters, and Johnson, you know, the center and the two tackles, and they are all coming back and, you know, hopefully healthy. So The other guys, you worry about Alan Barber or Barbary, however you want to say it, whoever else they put in there. But the three key guys, I think, will be fine. Then we have the wide receivers. Jeremy Maclin, of course, the chief now. The Eagles did draft a wide receiver to replace him, Nelson Agholor out of USC. I like that pick, by the way. 6 foot, 198 pounds, decent speed. He's got pretty good hands. I know he's a rookie, but I think Agholor is going to do just fine in this offense. What do you think, Swit?
I think he will, too. The thing is, I think he's almost a clone to Jeremy Maclin, but with a little bit more talent. I think he'll be a better kick returner and a punt returner in the return game. I think he gives you, you know, more options there. But if you look at his size, if you look at his speed, Maclin had a great season last year, and, you know, the life and times of free agency, you can't keep everybody, and he got a great deal from Kansas City, and he left. But I think you got an upgrade of Jeremy Maclin in Agholor.
Yeah, and plus you have Jordan Matthews, of course, coming back for his second season, so hopefully he'll continue to progress as a pro. You have Zach Ertz at tight end. He's going to get better and better, I think. And keep an eye on Josh Huff. I know he had a bunch of mistakes last year, but he also made some plays. He's got some speed. He can catch. Josh Huff is going to have a good year. I know a couple of writers, I think Elliot Shore Parks from NJ.com said keep an eye on him as a potential breakout star for this offense. We shall see, but I think they got a pretty good receiving crew, all told.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really do. And one thing is, too, with going back to Chip Kelly, you know, you don't have to have Hall of Fame wide receivers in this offense. I think it's a very system-type offense. I think it's kind of a plug-and-play offense, if you will. I think Agholor, going back to Agholor, I think he'll fill in nicely for Maclin, and as you mentioned, Matthews is back, and you know, Josh Huff will be better, or he should be better than last year, and then you got Riley Cooper. I mean, you know, this is going to be a good offensive, this is going to be a good wide receiver core this year, and we'll just have to see, you know, who gets the majority of the touches, but I would probably think this is the year that Matthews really stands out and becomes, I think, the number one wide receiver on this team.
Now let's turn our attention to the defense. I think the front seven is going to be awesome. I mean, they got 12 or 13 quality guys to rotate for this front seven. I really like the linebacking crew. D'Amico Ryan's supposedly back healthy. They acquired Kiko Alonso in the Shady McCoy deal. Of course, Connor Barwin's back. Michael Kendricks, who we thought might get traded or released, is coming back. Brandon Graham looking for a big year with that new contract. Others in that group, plus rookie Jordan Hicks out of Texas. And then on the line, you got Fletcher Cox, Benny Logan, Cedric Thornton, Vinnie Curry, and the rest of those guys up front. So a lot of depth for that front seven. I think they're going to be fun to watch.
Sure, I agree with you. And I know the linemen up front, as you mentioned, very impressive. I do have a question about D'Amico Ryans, especially coming off an Achilles heel injury once again. I'm surprised he's back and on the field practicing. It's going to be kind of interesting to see how he plays when you get the football speed. I mean, you know, you could take your training camps and everything. You know, as you all know, Chet, they really don't do the activities in training camp like it did years ago. I'm kind of curious to see how he's going to play, even in the preseason games, when it comes time to football speed, game speed, if you will, how that Achilles is going to cooperate. And the same thing with Alonso, Kiko Alonso. I mean, an ACL injury, now I heard this is his second. I don't know if it was an opposite knees, but I heard he had one in college. But, again, everything's good when you're running around in shorts. But when you put the pads on and get the game speed, that's another ball game. But I agree with you on the front seven, though, very impressive, and that should definitely be a strong suit for the defense this year.
As you said, they haven't put the pads on yet, but from all indications, Kiko Alonso is looking great, looking like he's moving just, you know, without any problems at all. So if he is healthy, that's going to be a great linebacking crew. Now, the real question mark, still the secondary. The Birds were, I think, 31st, maybe 32nd in the league last year in pass defense. They did acquire one big-name free agent in Byron Maxwell, the cornerback from the Seahawks. They signed another free agent, another ex-Seahawk, by the way, and an ex-Giant, Walter Thurmond. They're moving him from cornerback to safety. They drafted a bunch of DBs as well, including Eric Rowe out of Utah. I guess Boykin's back, a couple other guys, Earl Wolfe, who they're hoping will finally, you know, start playing a little better. I mean, they couldn't be much worse. So they will be better. The question is how much better the secondary will be, Swit. What's your take on that group?
Yeah, that's a key question. They should be much better. And as you said, with a 31st or 32nd ranked defense, how can they possibly get any worse? But, yeah, I expect to see some improvement. But to what extent, I really don't know. And just going from top to bottom on some of the names you mentioned, Byron Maxwell, I mean, I think the worst-kept secret in free agency was that he was ticketed for the Eagles, and that certainly happened. They gave him a boatload of money. I mean, well overpaid for him, $25 million guaranteed, 63, I think, over 6 years. That's unheard of. I'm curious if he's going to be one of the guys I'm going to be looking forward to seeing this year and seeing how he fits in as a number one corner. I mean, he's not going to have that legion of boom around him with, you know, Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, you know, playing in the same defensive backfield. He's the man right now. And I'm curious to see if he's going to be able to live up to that big contract. As far as Walter Thurman, I think he's just another guy, to be honest with you. They got him, you know, on a one-year contract at a reasonable salary coming off some injury issues. Eric Rowe, from everything I heard, he's supposed to be a decent player. We'll see, again, when we get into the games and even in the preseason, you know, how much he shows. But I think that offer, going back briefly to the defensive front, I think if the defensive front could get some pressure on the quarterback, then it's going to make that defensive backfield look so much better. And, you know, time will tell. But, again, they should be better. And I hope they're not going to be 31st or 32nd ranked again this year.
They better not be. Now, I'm not going to ask you for any predictions yet. It's too soon for that. But let me just ask you this. The Cowboys, of course, lost DeMarco Murray, but they do have Sean Lee coming back on defense. They were 12-4 last year, surprising everybody. Are they still the team to beat, clearly, the Cowboys?
I would have to say no at this point. I mean, just
no.
No, I don't think so. You know what? Yeah, and you know my take on the Eagles. I'm not an Eagle homer, but I think – on paper, the Eagles are the team to beat. I truly believe that. I think the Cowboys have, I mean, they have a great offensive line. I think they're going to be, they're behind the eight ball at the running back position. I am curious to see what they're going to do with that, even with an all-star offensive line and Romo being Romo. I mean, I think the Eagles are a well-rounded team, especially on the offensive end, and certainly will be better on defense. And I'll give the edge as we speak right now, and it may change as we go here, but I'll give the Eagles as the team to beat in the NFC East.
Well, I'm glad we at least disagree on something, Swit. I still say the Cowboys are the team to beat. I hope they're, you know, proven not to be the best team in the East, but we shall see. Hey, one other quick football thing before we talk a little hockey. What did you think of the Tom Brady 4-game suspension being upheld related to Deflategate?
Well, what a surprise, I guess, right? With, you know, Roger Goodell being the, you know, prosecution jury and judge on, you know, on this thing here. I think it's a complete joke. I don't like Roger Goodell. Let me just, you know, get that out there right off the bat. I thought it was ridiculous. I think the whole thing's ridiculous with the Deflategate. I don't even think it should have got to this point. I mean, you want to fine the guy for not cooperating or something. That's all fine and well, but just 4-game suspension, you know, for something where he probably did, and I'm paraphrasing or quoting the report that was given to the NFL. I mean, they don't even know for a fact that this thing happened. They said it probably happened. How can you give a guy a four-game suspension for something that probably happened but not definitely?
I'm going to have some thoughts about all that in my parting shot in about 5 minutes, so stay tuned for that. Now, Swit, you are a hockey guy. Did you like the news that the Flyers signed Sean Couturier to a long-term extension?
Well, I'll tell you what, Chad. I first saw the news on one of the nationally sports televised crawlers, if you will. I don't want to mention the name. But I saw that they...
Does it start with an E and have an SP in the middle?
That would be correct. That would be the one. I saw that the only thing I saw was that they signed Couturier to a multi-year contract. Didn't see the numbers, didn't see the years. And then I saw it, I read it on that website. And when I saw 6 years and $26 million, I almost fell off the couch. I mean, this is a guy that is a third-line player. Now, granted, he's young, and he's got potential to grow, but this guy had a career high, 15 goals last year, and I think he had, 25 assists. But, you know, you're talking about almost $4.3 million for a third-line player. Now, they're expecting him to bump him up. They're expecting to bump him up to the second line. But that is superstar money, and by all accounts, anyway, for me, Couturier is not a superstar player.
Yeah, I agree, and I was a little surprised at the numbers as well. As you said, a 15-goal scorer last year, and that was his career high. At least he admits he's got to pump it up a little bit offensively. I'll tell you who does like this deal, and that's Jake Voracek, because Voracek's entering a contract year, and if they're given a third-line center who has never really scored that much, $26 million over 6 years, Jake's thinking, oh, boy, I'm going to have a nice little pay raise coming my way. So what do you think is going to happen with Voracek? Is he going to get his money?
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, off topic a little bit, this is one of the guys I would have liked to see the Flyers trade in the offseason, because you can't sign everybody. You can't give everybody $4 and a $5 million a year contract. A lot of the things Ron Hextall has done, I've always liked Ron Hextall as a player, and I think he's done some good things as general manager in the early going, but the Couturier contract is a complete joke in my opinion. And Voracek, I think he's going to be in the line of something what Giroux is getting, and that's $8 and $9 million a year. That's what I'm saying.
Yep, it's going to be an interesting season though with the new coach Dave Hextall. We don't know a whole lot about him, but he's seemingly getting some good reviews. Hopefully it'll work out, and the Flyers will be back in the playoffs next year. Any early thoughts on how that's going to work out?
Well, when I heard they hired Hextall, I never heard of him. I'm not a fan of college hockey, so I know he came from a prestigious hockey program, and I've been reading up and learning more about him as he's taken over. One thing I have read, this guy is a no-nonsense guy. He's kind of like a Mike Keenan type. So the boys, if you will, they have their work cut out for him this year. This guy's all business, and it's going to be interesting to see when he has to put the hammer down on some of these players, especially if they're going to be veterans, from a guy that's coming from a hockey program.
We'll try to squeeze in a little Phillies talk as we near the top of the hour, but since we're talking hockey, I do want to make a couple announcements regarding our upcoming shows, because our next show, 2 weeks from tonight, Wednesday, August 12th, we will have a legendary Flyer on our show, Brian Propp. He's going to talk a little Flyers hockey in the summer. The Eagles, of course, will be prepping for their first preseason game at that time, and we'll keep an eye on those Phillies. Sweet, you always liked the Propper, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, Propper. He was one of my favorite growing up. Who doesn't like the old guffaw after he scored a goal? He would take his glove off and do the old guffaw, but he was one of my favorite, and that's long before I became a member of the media. So, but yeah, Proppy, he was one of the best, one of the guys I grew up with.
Yes, indeed. Speaking of the Propper and some other legendary Flyers, I want to update the signings list at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown. Carl continuing to celebrate its 20th anniversary, and they're going crazy with signings right now. This Saturday, August 1st, it's the in-store signing by Phillies Hall of Famer Jim Bunning. Now, you may recall former Phils Don Money and Larry Boa have already been in the store in the last month or two. So now Bunning will be there, and he'll complete the really cool Veterans Stadium firsts photo that Carl has put together. You know, the first hit, the first home run, and the first victory, Jim Bunning. Carl's has beefed up also the August 29th signing with the Broad Street Bullies. Joe and Jimmy Watson will be there, and they're adding another Flyers great, the guy we just talked about, Brian Propp. So that is three pretty good ex-Flyers on August 29th. On September 19th, then, Carl has, speaking of Broad Street Bullies, the legendary three, we have, Dave the Hammer Schultz, Don Selesky, and Orest Kindrichuk. They were aligned together in the mid-70s, won a couple of Stanley Cups together, and they'll be together at Carl's on September 19th. Also, Hall of Fame collectors will want to be there for Jerry Cheevers, the legendary Bruins goaltender. He'll be in the store on September 12th. Information on all of these signings at the website, carlscards.com, or on Twitter, at carlscards, or you can just call the store and maybe even talk to Carl himself at 610-789-4996. That's 610-789-4996, a great little store that Carl has in Havertown. If all goes well, by the way, we will have Carl himself on our show again in August to tell you more about all of these signings. Swit, we got about 5 minutes left. Do you have a parting shot for us tonight?
Well, I'm looking at the Hamels thing as my parting shot. I just hope Ruben and the Phillies do value for Hamels. I don't want to see him make a trade versus for the sake of making a trade. If they can't get it done at the deadline, hold off till the off season and let McPhail do it on his own. But that would be it. Get true value, get some real value for Hamels, and let's start this building process and add to some of the key players that they have on this roster already.
And by the way, speaking of the Phillies, even with their 9-1 streak post All-Star break, they're still on target for about 99 or 100 losses, right around my prediction, by the way. I predicted 60-102. How do you see this season playing out, Swit?
Well, My prediction in the early going in the preseason was 78 wins, and you and Bill almost laughed me off the air. But I think they're growing. I think they got some pieces in place with Franco at third, and I think Nola's shown some good stuff. I think they got a couple pieces in place, and they'll continue to grow. I think that going back to Hamels thing, I think if they can get a couple of everyday players out of it, maybe a top-flight pitcher in a year or two, I think they're going to – I don't think they're too far away. I don't think they're as far away to contend as everybody else thinks.
As we speak, the trading deadline, a mere 44 hours away, so it's going to be a very interesting day or two in Phillies land. Now, my parting shot, the guy you talked about earlier, and you went with the whole innocent to proven guilty thing, well, listen – Tom Brady, you're a great quarterback. You still have those all-American boy looks. You have a ton of money, a beautiful wife, but I'm sorry, you're not coming across as being real smart right now. I wasn't in the locker room last winter when those footballs got a smidge smaller and lighter, but I don't believe you when you say you know nothing about it. And your explanation for destroying your phone isn't very convincing either. Yeah, I think you're a liar. You should have fessed up and apologized, and your suspension likely would have been cut in half, and this would have all been over. And, Tom, you would have been under center in your team's fourth game and maybe helped beat the Cowboys, which Eagles fans would have greatly appreciated. So, Tom, you screwed up. That's my parting shot.
Well, well said.
Thank you, Swit. Now, as we get closer to the top of the hour, I do want to get our thank yous out of the way. We want to thank, of course, the Philly fanatic, Dave Raymond, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. Swit, anything going on in your life that we should know about?
Just watching the Phillies. They are trailing 2-0 here, but they got out of – it could have been a lot worse. So they're showing a lot of fight and looking forward to watching the rest of the game here tonight. And that's basically how I'm rolling, really living in the fast lane, you know?
And 47 days until the Eagles play their season opener, and that is September 14th.
Yeah, it's going to be a real interesting season, and you know, Chip's kind of put himself out there and to, you know, kind of reshape the roster, if you will, and for his sake, it better work, because if not, the Wolves are going to be out in full force.
Oh, yeah. Going to be a lot of fun stuff to watch, though, over the next month or two. That's for sure. Thank you, Swit. We really do appreciate your input once again. For Bill Furman and Steve Switkowitz, this is Jim Chet Chesko, hoping you enjoyed the show and that you'll join Philly Press Box Radio again on Wednesday, August 12th, when Brian Propp joins us. You can listen through our Facebook page and like our Philly Press Box Radio page, or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And you can also find our shows, our archived shows, on iTunes and Stitcher as well. So enjoy your week and high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.